Hello and welcome to the Cosmic Eye Show. I am your host, Jason Napolitano, and I have the my co-host on the line, Mr. Chris Sheridan. How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing great today.
Excellent. It is an excellent day. We're actually recording this today on Saturday. We normally do it on Sunday. And then I say, of course, each week, hey, we have a new episode available every Sunday. And really, that's usually a lie because I don't put them up till really late. And it's usually Monday. It's like 12 at night. So I don't want to lie anymore. What I'm going to say from now on is there's a new episode available on Monday. It's we do that. Exactly. So anyway, there, unless you're listening very late, you know, and you, and you're, you know, up at 12 midnight on Sunday night, you know, our new episodes usually come up on Monday morning for you. Nevertheless, we're here each week for you talking about, important things. Things that we think are important, spiritual, psychological, esoteric, philosophical, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you for joining us. We got a great show this week. We're doing something we've been talking about for a long time and something that is a big issue today in the world. And that is the archetype of king, which gets a lot into the masculine psychology and to the archetype of the father is embedded in that as well. Some of the challenges that we face today and some of the backlash against the patriarchy and so on are, you know, directed at this, some of the negative aspects of this energy. So we're going to discuss a bit about the positives and negatives of this masculine energy, this king energy, the symbolism and so forth of this. Mainly drawing from the book King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette's book. I might pull a little bit about a little bit out of The Lord of the Four Quarters, which is John Perry's book. That's fantastic. And we'll pull some Jungian stuff and probably from Robert Johnson and so on as well. Seeing, you know, where the spirit moves us today. Thank you again for joining us. We appreciate all the listeners who are supporting us. If you can, please support us at anchor.fm/cosmiceye. And there's a button on there you can click on to provide financial support to us to keep the show going. We really appreciate those who are doing that. And please, if you can, do support us. All right, let's jump into this. So this is one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of, as we've talked about, there's a lot of backlash and a lot of sort of negativity and a lot of talk about the sort of quote unquote toxic side of masculinity today. I would argue that that's probably most of what you hear about any kind of masculine energy, particularly this king energy that we're going to talk about. Generally speaking, in symbolism and mythology, in most cultures, obviously, the queen is important and the feminine energy is important as well. So we're not trying to, you know, emphasize one over the other. But in this particular episode, we are going to emphasize this king and masculine energy because it has of late, particularly in the last, you know, probably 10 or 20 years. It goes back further than that, but it's really hit its kind of apotheosis in the last, you know, even in the last 5 years where it's almost just become, you know, completely identified with the negative and destructive side. You know, this masculine energy is seen as something that's bad or wrong. And you see a lot of problems with young men today in coming to terms with these, you know, the masculine energies and archetypes within themselves. And it's really become, I would argue, one of the bigger issues and the bigger problems facing us today, because it inhibits young men from really fully participating in life and culture and in the world and being creative and, you know, positive members of society. And, you know, you see a lot of, I think a lot of the younger men today almost kind of giving up and hiding out, you know, living in a world of video games and, you know, YouTube videos and fantasy, as opposed to striking out on their own and doing something constructive. And you can really see that's, you know, not a place where we want to go, because oftentimes these young men, you know, do very, very destructive things when they have a little bit of mental illness or they, you know, have a lot of aggression within them that they can't express. and so on, you know, and that's, again, that dark side of things. You know, we see that, right, Chris, in you know, in some of these things, like, the, you know, in the gang situations and in, you know, these young men that end up, you know, shooting up a school or a Walmart or something. It's inevitably almost a young male whenever you hear about these things. And it's a tragic thing. And mm-hmm. I think it's a corollary to a lot of what's going on, you know, in the sort of the outer world, in terms of this, you know, destructive side of this masculine energy that's being shoved underground into the shadow, and then it erupts in these really terrible ways. Would you agree with that?
Well, yes. Then the reason why it's erupting in these ways is because it's not integrated. That energy.
Exactly.
It's like almost, you know, teaching abstinence to a, you know, somebody going through puberty or, you know, or an adolescent. I mean, it's, yeah. You know, you're filled with these hormones that God and, you know, Darwin or whoever put in your system.
Hold on, Darwin put them in there?
Well, whatever. You know,
I was wondering where those came from.
Well, regardless of belief on, you know, biology or nurture. I mean, exactly. That's almost irrelevant at this point.
Yeah, yeah,
point
no, for
we
sure.
We are flooded with these hormones exactly. at that time, and they need to be addressed. You can't yep. just, it's like anything else. We talked about, you know, shoving them down to the shadow, but this is a yep. collective problem that we have yep. now. It is very much an individual problem, and it's going to require both a collective and individual response.
Yeah.
And to the critics of the patriarchy, I'm with you. It yep. is a real problem. Actually, the problem may even be worse. It's not just a problem for women. It's a problem mm-hmm. for men. And it's probably an even bigger problem for men, even though it seems like the men are the ones causing the problems. That's on the collective. And this has been happening, you said, for a long time. But this, you know, fever pitch that it's reached recently actually mm-hmm. may be a good sign, because then it's a symptom that, okay, now it's popped out of the shadow. We have to address yeah. it now.
Yeah, so, well, exactly. That's a great point.
Now, addressing it has so much to do with what we think the problem is. If, you know, if the climate is caused by carbon dioxide, well, then you'll try to get rid of carbon dioxide. But if it's more nuanced, or if it's a larger problem than that, you also have to integrate some of these other things.
Yeah.
And what's happened is, over the centuries, I would say, but certainly since the industrial age, the initiation from a boy going into a man used to be handled with the tribe or the culture or the church. You know, some of it still gets played out today in some mm-hmm. traditions.
Yeah.
But it doesn't, but we've, for the most part, we've lost that.
Yeah.
And what has happened is the need for it hasn't gone away.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
these young men find initiation into manhood through gangs, through, well, the military can be one version that has some good aspects. You know, they still have some of the old in it, but again, it's ostensibly to go off and do violent things.
Yeah.
Why you go into, you know, the military, you know, and the war, you know, like I said, you know, gangs, you know, political parties now are sort of you
sure.
know, the new gangs of these things, but
yeah,
without
definitely.
This initiation from boyhood to manhood, we are going to see these problems, because they haven't been transformed. These energies
yeah.
and urges within the male, same with females, we're you know, focusing on the male people now,
yeah.
that they have to be addressed. They have to be integrated. Myth, ritual have taught us for centuries how to do this. We have lost it. And it comes out in the most horrible ways, which is
yeah.
why we need to get back.
Yeah, you got to get back to some constructive and sort of positive archetypal ideas associated with it. So speaking on that, on the king, so it's the main sort of organizing principle in archetypal mythology in general, in most cultures, is the archetype of the king as the leader. And the king represents sort of God's representative on earth, in essence. And it's a very specific organizational type of representation. You know, the king represents order, you know, from chaos and protection and strength. And, you know, in a sense, like, so let's say the archetypal realm is, you know, cosmic law. The king then takes that cosmic law and translates that cosmic law into laws, like in the case of Hammurabi in the ancient Near East, and creates a code of laws. You know, Moses received
the Torah and the Ten Commandments from God, and those laws guide society. You know, and it goes on and on, of course, and we all can think of, you know, examples of that. Arthur, you know, King Arthur is the organizing principle between, you know, of the Knights of the Round Table and the realm, and the protector of the realm, and, you know, sort of initiator of those knights and so on. These are all sort of positive aspects of that king energy. Unfortunately, you know, we've gotten away from some of that, and we see the shadow sides and the tyrannical aspects. You know, more though, you know, going back, looking at, again, like the more sort of archetypal or mythological, you know, versions of the king, you know, the king was seen, again, the queen is part of this too. We're focusing solely on the king because they think that there's, you know, that's where the problem lies, you know, is some of this has gone awry, as we've talked about. The king was seen as, again, like the sort of stability, the generative capacity, and the fertility aspect of that particular culture. So in a myth like Parsifal, for example, in the Grail legend, you know, the Fisher King is a wounded king. He has a wound in his thigh. That's representative of his generative capacity. So, you know, he's no longer a generative, fertile, sort of providing sort of a king. He's actually wounded, and he can't really fully live, and he can't really die, and he's carried around on a stretcher, basically, on a litter, they call it. And he's suffering, and the whole land is suffering. It's desolate. That's what those mythologies are saying, is that when the king energy is sort of impotent, it's damaged, it's, you know, it's non-generative any longer, it needs to be revived. You know, Fraser talks about that in the Golden Bough. In most cultures, in the ancient world, the king actually would be ritually killed at the point where he was no longer, you know, creative and fertile and generative, and he was a positive aspect of leadership any longer. He'd be killed and replaced with another king. You know, the king is dead. Long live the king, was a saying that was, you know, said, you know, for ages and in different cultures throughout the world, because and that's representing that sort of archetypal energy, the archetypal king energy. By the way, when we talk about archetype, you know, we oftentimes talk about things, and I realize this, you know, we don't define them. So I want to define archetype a little bit. Why don't you do that? Because you did quite a bit of work on that. Can you just simply define archetype for people who might not be familiar with that term?
Well, the archetype is the overriding example of something, the essence of which any type could be made. So I guess we're talking about the king archetype. They say, you know, every man's house, you know, is his castle or something. So he's the king in that respect. But an archetype is, you know, say like a child is an archetype. Well, that could be anybody, an actual child, or it could be somebody who's acting childish. They are patterns, and we all seem to have the capacity for them.
It's like an energetic pattern kind of behind the
basic recipe or the basic principles behind something, of which you could have infinite expressions.
Yeah.
There's an automobile. Well, it's got four wheels and a steering wheel, and, you know, it does this and it does that. Well, sure. Then you could have a gazillion cars, but they all kind of go along with this same, and that these are primal. They're like first principles in mathematics or science. These are for the psyche, and these are these patterns, and we all have the capacity and the potential to express any of them. We really won't do all of them.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we don't all become the killer, but I think faced in a particular situation, most of us probably would be able to engage that if it were survival or to save somebody close to us.
Exactly, those instinctual patterns and instinctual energy patterns that are behind behavioral and symbolic imagery of a different sort. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Thank you.
And it goes back, you know, to the Greeks. I mean, you know, Aristotle wrote a lot about a lot about archetypes. So it's not as new as Jung. It's much older than Jung, so to speak. If you catch my
Oh, very punny, Chris.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm a homophone. I'm homophonic.
Wow, you are on track today, aren't you?
Yes, it was an excellent day. So my Bill and Ted are somehow coming through as we travel back in history. But all the Greek gods, you know, were that. They were archetypal energies. Yeah. You know, Zeus and the ruler, and we have the, you know, Bacchus or Dionysus, you know, the
living and dying god.
Yeah. So, you know, these are all, but they're all in us and they're all in everybody and throughout time.
So they're the essentials. They're the sort of essential idea behind like the, maybe the localized versions of those things. So you could say that, you know, Dionysus, Bacchus, Attis, you know, Balder, there's a bunch of different living and dying gods. And they even oftentimes have similar mythologies. Maybe they die on a tree, or there's some vegetation sort of mythology going along with things like that. Those are the archetypal idea, is the idea behind them. And then they play out in different cultural representations, right?
Like we've talked about the hero's journey being the archetypal story kind of structure. Hero with a Thousand Faces, exactly. Or all the movies.
Exactly.
All right, so go ahead.
No, I just wanted to kind of give it. So I don't want to go too far into architects, but I just wanted to give enough so that, you know, if you're not familiar with it, you know, then you know, we've at least kind of framed it, because that could be a whole show unto itself. At any rate, so the archetype is the sort of the energy behind this, and that's why the king archetype is one that's very squirrely for a lot of people these days, because people are keyed into, you know, the tyrannical aspects of kingship, the sort of, you know, the negative and sort of warring aspects and the destructive aspects that they see that are associated with this. And then basically we throw the baby out with the bathwater and we say, well, you know, masculine kingly type energy is the problem. And this is the reality of that. That energy and that archetypal, the patterning behind that is not the problem. We're not in touch with the real king archetypal energy. We're in touch with the shadow boy energy when we're talking about these negative sides of things, this quote unquote toxic masculinity or any of these sort of things that a lot of people rail against. It's not the real positive archetypal powerful energy that's connected to depth and strength and maturity. It's the boyish and immature aspects of it. That's the sort of non-mature version of this king energy that causes so much trouble, you know, and that's where the patriarchy, you know, fails, is that, you know, a lot of the people that are involved in sort of the conspiracy of keeping it, you know, keeping it where it keeps certain individuals, certain groups, you know, certain, you know, women, different, you know, people that sort of don't fit into the mold of it. Even other men that represent a more mature aspect of that energy are seen as a threat. It keeps all of those types of people down. And again, that's based in a sort of fearful, boyish, you know, non-integrated sort of an energy. And that's, I think, what we see today that's represented, that people are upset about, and they should be.
Yeah.
The problem is with all of this, is that I think what's happening is people are making a leap to say, well, then if the sort of patriarchal energy or this negative king energy, this shadow king energy, this sort of tyrannical sort of, I think, it calls it a high chair tyrant, high chair tyrant or something. Robert Moore and Gillette talk about that. You know, it's these dark sides of this energy that people see. The problem is that there are very few, you know, elders and strong leaders and, you know, men who have integrated this into themselves that are older, that can initiate young men and sort of bring them into the fold, as it were, and kind of help them on their path. You know, one of the main differences that, you know, most people can agree on if they look at it psychologically is that, you know, women tend to naturally mature faster than men do.
And they do it really without much pain and struggle. They just kind of naturally unfold in a bit more integrated and level-headed way. You know, and they, you know, you see, they see it in school, you know, women are more communicative and more in touch with their emotions. And, you know, boys have a struggle and they, you know, there's more problems with ADD and ADHD and, you know, they're rambunctious. And young men need, they're kind of like, you know, puppies that like a pit bull puppy or something. They need kind of a strong hand in order for them to be integrated into society. I don't mean abused by any means. I mean naturally led in a masculine way into a positive type of masculinity. And there are very few structures. I would almost argue there are almost no structures left in the modern world, in Europe, in and North America, that provide that sort of framework for these young men, that actually give them the sort of structure that they need in order to integrate into society in a constructive way. Whereas women tend to, like I said, mature sort of on their own. They definitely, you know, everyone needs nurturing and help. It's not to say that they're, you know, they're just left, they need to be left alone, but it somehow it seems to unfold in a little less violent and chaotic way than men. And why you see prisons filled, you know, with men, not with women, you know, because men act out, generally speaking. And so this is why this thing is so important, and why this is such a huge issue today, is that, you know, not only are we throwing the baby out with the bathwater, we're throwing all the you know, sort of quote unquote toxic masculinity out, then we're throwing out the positive sides of masculinity, then we're not creating, you know, any new elders or anyone that even knows how to do this work, how to initiate young men and how to, you know, give them the help that they need. And then we're just labeling the whole thing as negative and toxic and just like trying to forget about it. And then we're saying, well, what we need to do is we need to take a more quote unquote, like, you know, sort of feminine approach to things. You know, and then that'll help the men if they just integrate that. And the thing is that it's a great balance, and men need to get in touch with that feminine side. Unfortunately, they're being swamped with that energy today in a negative way, and they're not maturing in the way that they need to as young men. And so it's stunting their growth, and then there's no possibility for them to grow into the constructive men that have a, you know, work they're in touch with that archetypal king energy, that archetypal leadership and, you know, balance energy that will allow them to then integrate that feminine side in a constructive way. So it's, you know, it's a multi-sided challenge and problem. And that's why, like, getting, you know, this kind of starting these discussions, and, you know, this work started back in the, you know, in the 80s, 70s, even, you know, and kind of hit its apotheosis in the 90s in a lot of ways with Robert Bly and with Moore and Gillette. And, you know, like I talked about John Weir Perry, who wrote Lord of the Four Quarters, and some of the men's movements and stuff. And you can go back and see some of that stuff on YouTube, that Robert Bly men's conference thing. There's a thing with, if you just look up Bill Moyers and Robert Bly on YouTube, there's a great video on that, and you can see kind of the vibe they were going for. So, you know, this has been something that people have been talking about, men have been talking about, women have been talking about for many, many years. And we've seen that it's an issue, but it really, the challenge now is that it's a problem and people don't even understand or know how to frame it as a problem. Do you know what I mean? So that it's an even bigger problem because we can't even name it or look at it.
Yeah, that's why I suggest it may even be worse than, as bad as it is.
Yeah.
It may even be worse because we've lost touch. We've lost the trail.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, if we're trying to track this thing down, we've lost the scent.
Yeah. Well, we really have to go back to mythology, and we have to go back to some of the older ideas in some ways and resurrect them in new ways. And, you know, again, some of this stuff has kind of been thrown out or thrown over by academics as well as being, you know, a product of another time, or it's no longer really relevant anymore. And it's like, you know, I'm not here to argue that, you know, men are different or, you know, or more, you know, there's this or that thing. The point is, though, if you just look and kind of see society and you look at the way it functions and you generally think about your relationships with men and women in your life, you can see there's differences in functioning. There's differences in psychological interpretations of things. There's differences in communication styles, generally speaking, not all the time, but generally speaking, between men and women, there are these traits and things that they hold. And these are things that are based in biology, they're partly based in culture, partly based in biology, you know, partly based in, you know, archetypal collective, images and energies that are behind the scenes, you know. We're never probably going to put our fingers on where it all comes from. You know, you get the behaviorists arguing one thing and you get the depth psychologists arguing another. And the point is, the arguing needs to stop and people need to just look at society and go, wow, we've got some tremendous problems, especially in this area of masculinity, especially with young men today. And we need to address it in some fashion or another. And, you know, it says nothing about the value of either this or that, you know, gender or this or that, you know, type of archetypal energy. They're both equally valuable, masculine and feminine energies. The challenge is right now, there is a paucity of positive masculine king type energy that young men need, and they need, you know, they need older men to help share with them. Which is why we wanted to do this podcast and, you know, today, and why I think we'll probably continue to talk about these issues in further podcasts in the future. You know, because any of us who have grown up have dealt with these challenges if we're a man. You know, you have, I have, everyone I know has. The lack of positive father figures and the lack of positive male role models in society is alarming. It really is. And it should be alarming to women as well, because, you know, this sort of toxic masculinity that this vacuum of positive male role models creates is very dangerous. It's very, very dangerous. Do you know what I mean? And just like we talked about earlier, you know, you get these really dark shadow eruptions of this energy in these violent acts that generally happen, again, perpetrated by young men, where it bursts forth in these really chaotic and violent sort of actions. And, you know, that's something we all have to kind of take responsibility for, because it's a multifaceted problem. It's a multifaceted problem, but just to pretend like it doesn't exist, or to pretend like it's, well, it's just gun laws, or it's just, you know, we just need to change this law or that law. Or we just need to help young men have more self-esteem, or they need to have less masculine energy and then that'll solve the problem. That's not the problem. They need to have more masculine energy, but it needs to be a mature type of masculine energy. So how do we go about doing that? How do we go about doing that, right?
Well, we can trace back and see, you know, where we've lost that along the way. And tribal cultures weren't perfect either.
No.
Just because maybe they did a few things, they have their own problems.
Exactly.
And, you know, fortunately, we don't have to deal with some of the problems they had. And every culture throughout time or technology will have problems. But the industrial age brought people off the farm. So we're, you know, mostly the men, you know, went to work in the mines and the factories. So then there's a separation from the household. It happened with the fathers, and with criminal justice laws, there's a lot of fathers in a lot of neighborhoods that are in prison. And then you couple that with the divorce generation, of which I'm from, and it is my age group whose children, including mine, are in the millennial generation. So there is generational. They're suffering. But I think something with the divorce generation, so to speak, because most of the time it seemed, in my experience, that the kids would live with a mother. Maybe one would go with the father, they'd flip them back and forth, or something with weekends or summers, but much of the time it was with the mother.
Yeah, exactly.
And then if she works, then you have latchkey kids, so you have no parent for at least, you know, a couple hours a day, maybe 3 hours between the kid gets home from school and the parent, the remaining single parent does. So the women have had to do both roles.
Exactly.
which is not good for them.
No, no.
and it's not fair to them either. It's completely unfair. And then the boys are either left to be on their own, and, oh, well, boys will be boys. Well, they will be, unless there's some men who are mature, can put these boys, set these boys straight. Actually, the only thing that's really helped some of these kids, young men, has been the grandmother in the system.
Yeah, that's true.
They have been, you know, really filling that role of the male because they know better.
And they have to act in that sort of stern, masculine, you know, sort of style. An authoritarian style in order to kind of keep some of these boys in line. And they do a good job, at least the best job that they can at it. And God bless them for trying. And God bless these women that have, you know, been single mothers and tried to raise these boys and stuff. It's extremely difficult. I grew up like that as well. Part of my life, you know, it's an enormous burden. And it puts, you know, it puts roles and responsibilities, you know, two different roles and responsibilities on one person, and they're usually just struggling to try to make ends meet. And then you're supposed to, at the same time, initiate a young man into, you know, adulthood and things like that. And it's something's going to give, you know, something's going to fall apart in that situation, right? So,
well, I'd say the wheels are coming off at this point.
Yeah.
Well, to get them back on, maybe we have to go back to a time before maybe there was such a thing as a wheel. Aboriginal or indigenous, ancient tribes. One of the ways in which, and this is a more than just a ceremony, this is a real ritual. And I guess sometimes the difference between ceremony and ritual gets lost. Ceremony is when there's, you know, there's a parade, maybe you wear the clothes and you go through the motions. Ritual is when you actually get in there and do it.
Yeah.
And get your nails dirty. So what would happen for the young men?
Well, you know what? There's a ceremony celebrates, ritual transforms is what just popped into my mind.
Wow. Yeah. Make a note of that. That's an incredibly important distinction and very well put.
Thank you.
A few words. So this, you know, boy to man ritual, it would happen in about 3 days. Physically, of course, they, you know, it takes longer, but this is when it happened and it was done on purpose and it was done with everybody, all the elders of the tribe involved. And one version of it goes like this: the 13-year-old boys are, you know, sleeping in their, you know, bed next to their mothers, and then somebody in a mask, the men dressed up, will come in and they'll grab the kid from the mother's arms, and the mother's in on it too. She's yelling and screaming, "Don't take my baby, baby." And, you know, but they're in on it because they know. And then these young men get pulled off and they're sent to a cave, or they're buried up to their head in sand, or, you know, have to go through, you know, some kind of task or trial.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they have to skin a deer. And the male elders, you know, of the tribe are there too to shepherd them through this. But it's very scary and they have to learn something. And 3 days later, when they come back, they are not the same person that left.
Yeah.
Now have to become. So what is bestowed upon them? Well, first of all, is the death of the child. We have, you know, the, you know, psychological, and
particularly
death,
the death of the boy.
The boy. Well, I guess that's a child. Yes. Yeah. Definitely the boy, because at 13-ish, physiologically, the boy dies and starts growing hair.
Exactly.
And, you know, voice gets deep. And so that's gone anyway, physiologically.
So it's already happening.
But psychologically, we're not doing that today. But psychologically, they did that then. So when that boy came back, they probably had to kill an animal, had to survive some ordeal that they never would have been prepared for.
You're
going to
be humiliated, also in the
you are, yes,
in the
you
sense
are stripped
of the word
of everything.
Yeah. And the humiliation in the sense that, you know, you're becoming humble. You have to become, you know, you're getting out of that center of the world. I am a child that, and mom is gonna, you know, wait on me, and dad,
that's over. It's over overnight.
Right?
That's gone, and you don't, there's no going back.
But you're
also given the means to be a man. You're shown,
you get the wisdom, you get the secrets,
you know. Right now we kind of lose it, but we're not shown the next step. And there's something empowering in that. So when that kid comes back, he's got the secret knowledge.
Yeah.
He's done something he's never done before. He's seen and heard things, and he's found out things about himself he never, ever knew. So he literally is not the same kid who left. He's been baptized in fire.
Yeah.
And
you know, and he's well, there's gone new, this
there's
thing.
A whole set of expectations on him now. Now he is responsible for his actions. Prior to that, he was a child and there was leeway. Now he is mm-hmm. known as a man. And when you make mistakes, then you will be punished accordingly, as a man is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that gives you this sort of sense of, I know where I stand in society. I understand my place in it, and I understand what my duties and responsibilities are. And that is another thing that gets into the challenge of today's world, is that those duties and responsibilities are not clear. They're contested on all sides, and you know, but where we, you know, we may or may not disagree with these different ideas that we're presenting here today, but you know, it's important to recognize that, you know, look, the biology and the physiology of men and women are different. With this we know. Now, much of culture is constructed, and much of these gender roles, you know, is constructed by society and so on. And where that came from or how that occurred is, you know, is, again, highly contested. But the situation is, when we really sit down and think about it, we can see the differences, you know, generally speaking. And again, I say generally, not 100% of the time, but generally speaking, you know, between, you know, boys and girls, even when they're very young. You know, and this is where we get into this situation where we've got to look at the fundamentals of how these young men are being initiated into society, and there needs to then be some expectations and some roles. And what the challenge is today that we've dismantled all those ideas, expectations, and roles, and you know, these young men still have this drive and this energy and this rambunctiousness and this need for initiation and this need for male role models, and none of those things exist. And then they go play, you know, violent first-person shooter video games all day long, or, you know, drive around like maniacs in their souped-up Japanese cars. And, you know, this is their acting out of their masculinity. It doesn't have a positive sort of channel any longer. And then we're,
well, it's a pseudo masculinity.
It is.
And it's an attempt.
It is. They're trying. That they're trying.
Part of them knows this has to happen.
Exactly.
Or I'm not going to become a man. So they're reaching.
Yeah.
They're trying, or joining gangs, or doing
sure.
something. You know, it's. But you got to do something, because
yeah.
this is beyond society. You know, like social things or whatever. This is just a primal urge. It's as mysterious as anything else. And
yeah.
yes, it. This is just how it plays out now.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things we can do is, you know, just by starting to open up these dialogues and open up these discussions and recommend some books and videos and so on, and just starting to get the conversation going again about how these young men can start to develop these qualities. And, you know, for us, you know, for people of our age, you know, for men that are over 40, really, in general, you know, we have to take on the mantle of responsibility and say, okay, you know what? I'm willing to be an elder, and I'm willing to step into the role of, you know, being an initiator and a man who can help young men and is willing to, you know, sort of initiate them into these new, you know, or into these older ways of being. Now, how we're going to do that, you know, is still developing. You know, because it's very different. You know, we're not going to go back and, you know, recreate the initiatory rituals of a tribal society and the litigious society that we live in. I mean, let someone get hurt or let someone die, God forbid. And, you know, obviously we don't want to see that. But oftentimes these rituals involved, you know, dangerous things. So now we've got to figure out a way, well, how can we kind of get some of that danger in and some of, you know, some of that sort of psychological transformative possibility, you know, in a kind of a bit safer way, and still have those strengths and masculine, you know, qualities developed in these young men. But, you know, it starts with recognizing that there's a problem, and then it starts, mm-hmm. and then it starts with older men, you know, accepting responsibility, even if they didn't get that kind of blessing or leadership bestowed on them, to just sort of take charge and say, okay, well, I'll initiate myself in, and then I'll bring these younger men along, because I have been, you know, like, for example, look, if you grow in your life and you make it to 40, you know, you've learned some stuff.
you've learned some stuff. Now, if you really sit back and, you know, you do some psychological work and maybe you do some analysis and you do, you know, you get into some Jungian work and, you know, you meditate and you do some archetypal mythological study and so on, you know, you begin to learn a few things about yourself and hopefully you can, you know, you can share it. And again, one of these things though is, you know, the kind of functions of the king, getting back to the king, you know, one of his functions was to, you know, assure order and protection and, you know, stave off chaos, you know, because the king is seen as the creator of culture and the sort of organizer of culture. You can see that in the mythology of Marduk slaying Tiamat. Tiamat was the sort of demoness monster who he slew, and you know the world was created out of that chaos or that disorder monster, and you know they initiate this sort of order on society and culture. And then, you know, the other thing they do is, you know, is in tandem with that is to, you know, they're responsible for the fertility and the generativity of the land, as we talked about earlier. But then, you know, the second sort of function outside of that generativity and that protection part of it is blessing the young men. You know, the king would bless the young men. He would initiate the knights and he would oversee the sort of ritual that went on and give those men blessings. And young men need blessings. They need to hear that they're okay and that they're not bad and that masculine energy just needs to be, you know, transmuted into positive ends, not, you know, snuffed out and killed. Right. And so, you know, and that's the job of, you know, of us as older men to be able to offer those blessings and to be able to offer some of this information to the younger man and hopefully share that so that, you know, we can make a difference in their lives. Right.
Well, we can. And again, an older time had a master apprentice kind of arrangement, or even the family name. If you're the blacks, or the goldsmiths, that's what you did for a living.
Yeah.
If it was, you know, your name is Bob Baker Jr. Well, guess what? Bob Sr.
Yeah,
is.
Exactly.
That's where their name came from. Yeah. I mean, it was literally, you were defined by that, but you were shown the family business. And each time as you grew up, you were able to do more and more.
Yeah.
Oh, you can't go to the oven. You're a child. Oh, you're a teenager now. You can work the oven at the pizza parlor. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And it comes responsibility. And when you entrust a young person with some responsibility, it is so empowering.
Yeah.
It says, wow, I can do this difficult thing. And with something that carries responsibility, generally it's because it affects other people.
Yeah.
So if you're cooking or you're smithing or something, well, then someone's going to get their, well, you know, buggy wagon fixed, or they're going to, you know, fill their belly with a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
That works into that providing. So that's more of that king nature. It was kind of built in a lot into the system. So we need to re-systematize that, I guess, to where people are, you know, especially young men, are given particular responsibilities and are shown the correct way, why it's better than the incorrect way.
Yep.
And that there is some reward, if it's praise, if it's, again, more added responsibility and abilities to do things, they're shown the right way to power.
Yeah.
The wrong way to power is to be a tyrant and demand it and get upset when it doesn't happen, be fearful of the people that are trying to take away your power.
Yeah.
Somebody who's more reserved. And, you know, with this king, you know, what we're talking about, if you pause and really look at the king imagery, especially from like the Middle Ages, but you could go back to pharaohs in ancient Egypt. What are they doing? They're sitting. They are sitting on a throne. They're almost defined by that. Certainly in imagery, you know, oh, the guy sitting at a throne, he must be the king.
Yeah.
And it's because the king has a kingdom. There is a realm of power. And that's what's also defined in this ordering. And it really doesn't go beyond that. So some of it, you know, what a king does is sets limits on the kingdom. And this is where we rule. This is the realm in which, you know, we can exert power and I can exert my authority.
Yeah.
But it has boundaries, which is, you know, another thing that, you know, the king bestows, even in The Lion King. You know, it was shown that these are the limits to the kingdom. Beyond that is the monkeys, and beyond that is this.
Yeah.
It was very clearly defined. So maybe our mythology, maybe our movies, if we can start seeing some of these things, I think they're in there.
Yeah.
But it's not, it needs to be a little more deliberate, or maybe a lot more deliberate, and certainly
sure.
more guided into, you know, if it's movies or stories or video games or anything that, you know, can use this mythic imagery and this, you know, tribal culture that, you know, we haven't lost touch with it.
Exactly.
We need to re-energize it, reform it into today's thing, like we're doing on a podcast. It's, you know, using technology for that.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the thing is, there are things that you can, you know, you can get in touch with, you know, to get sort of involved with some of these sort of more masculine energies that still exist. I mean, Freemasonry certainly is an ancient, you know, sort of group, but, you know, that's come into the modern world based on a lot of these ideas. And, you know, one of the ideas in Freemasonry is, you know, making good men better. And, you know, there's this idea of taking this rough ashlar, this stone, and carving it into something of value. And, you know, the whole idea of Freemasonry and the symbolic nature of that is really, it's carving something into something else. Do you know what I mean? And there's the structure and order and the sort of initiatory rituals that exist, and that, you know, fellowship and brotherhood that exists, you know, and there are still some of these things that are, you know, alive today and are actually gaining in popularity. You know, and one of the ways a lot, you know, young men can start to actually get back in touch with some of this energy is to just, you know, first to recognize that, you know, one, it's okay to be a guy, you know, and it's the masculine energy that you possess is a positive thing. Don't believe all of the, you know, the negative ideas about toxic masculinity, in the sense that I overgeneralize. There is such a thing as toxic masculinity, but that's that boyish kind of unregulated, kind of immature, you know, energy that's destructive, and it, you know, like it turns into, you know, crime and gangs and, you know, the sort of destructive stuff that we see. That is not the positive aspect of masculinity. And so, you know, in some ways you have to kind of go and search for these positive images of masculinity, especially in the media today. If you watch most of these shows, especially sitcoms and so on, the father and most masculine figures are either buffoons or completely ineffective or just the butt of a bunch of jokes, or they are tyrannical, you know, monstrous beings for the most part, you know. And you know, one of the things that's being done today that I think does a disservice to both men and women is taking these masculine stories, these masculine mythologies, and then putting, you know, just plopping a female into the lead and then thinking, oh, that's going to right things. That's going to help, you know, everybody. It's going to balance everything out. All that does is denigrate the feminine and the masculine at the same time, in my opinion. Because there are fabulous stories of, you know, female protagonists and female mythologies that involve them even being warriors. So that's not, you know, something that women don't do. But to take, you know, a classic sort of men's myth and just stick a woman in the role, it does a disservice, I think, to both sexes. That's just my opinion, you know. But I think it's one of the challenging things. So going back and maybe watching these movies or stories in their original forms, which means maybe going back and reading the mythology or watching older movies. But I mean, look, Star Wars, the original Star Wars with Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker. First of the three that you know, the original Star Wars series, you know, has that kind of mythology in it still. Obviously, if you go back and watch things like Excalibur or some of these older movies that involved, you know, the King Arthur stories and things like that, even the Gilgamesh story and Beowulf, these are classic sort of tales that involve you know, kings and masculinity in a constructive iteration. Of course, reading the, you know, the Grail legends and the Arthur stories and so on are fantastic. Like you said, The Lion King, a lot of the old Disney stuff has these themes in it. But, you know, the old Disney stuff has some great folk tales for women as well, which is, you know, the original sort of folk tales that have, you know, women protagonists in them as well. But, you know, that's outside of the scope of this. And we will talk about the queen archetype, and we will talk about the feminine future issues. It's just right in future shows. But right now, I mean, I think, you know, both of us, as we talked about before the show, you know, feel like there's, you know, there's really a kind of a crisis in this area. And we want to start addressing some of these issues and giving you some tools to look at. And, you know, like I said, you know, as an older man myself, you know, I want to offer out to all the, you know, to the younger men that are out there, you know, for what it's worth, my blessing for you guys to, you know, make it through this and, you know, have some good masculine strength and, you know, reach out and find that king energy. But, you know, it's important to kind of recognize that you got, you know, there's a lot of young men that are doing great work and really fighting against a lot of challenges, you know, in a challenging situations and doing fantastic work. And, you know, a lot of young men that are struggling that need that blessing. So blessings to you, brothers. You know, you guys will make it and you will find your way. It takes time, but, you know, look towards some of these things that Chris and I are talking about. And I think you're going to be all right. You're going to find that balance that you need. Any parting words, to the listener today, Chris?
Well, maybe just to recap, there is a problem with the patriarchy. It's a huge problem and there are huge solutions, and I think we've touched on them. And maybe one thing to keep in mind is if, because of these qualities of the mature king versus the qualities, so to speak, of the immature boy king, if you see somebody bullying other people, it's probably, whether it's a corporation or a government or any person involved in these institutions, a sports program, then they're probably not the right king. That is the toxic.
Exactly. Exactly. Thing. And there
it's
is an, a difference.
It's like a warning sign. Beware.
Absolutely.
Beware of
that is
them.
Not the energy
you know,
you're
not doing
for.
That. Yeah. And yes, it is wrong, but look for the good and try to find, and then maybe as guys, you know, listening and women too can, you know, ask that they see proof of this. You can help prod us along. You know, guys aren't always motivated unless we have some, you know, whether it's feminine energy or an actual woman or some object of you know wanting to help out your country, something love of country, you know there has to be that motivating factor.
Yes, but that's a moving towards order. By the way, though, it's a moving towards and it's a doing something for the feminine. It's not an initiation by the feminine, and that's been a big part of the problem also. So just to differentiate,
and maybe
that.
Chivalry isn't dead, you know, play along. Some of these, you know, opening a car door for a girl, yeah, they can do it and it's not demeaning, but it's part of the ritual expression.
And I mean, a woman will
that.
Tell you if she doesn't want that, and that's perfectly fine. But I mean, if we can just assume,
absolutely.
Like try to be a gentleman and assume certain constructive elements of masculinity until told otherwise, because
and give praise. I think that is the thing that is probably one of, and it was the thing that surprised me the most. So I will end with that. On doing the research, you know, through this book and listening to some videos and you know, learning always from you, one of the things that came up, yes, a king is, you know, power and authority and, you know, wielding it judiciously and brings order, you know, to an otherwise chaotic situation. But wow, that wasn't lost on me, and it wasn't hidden either. It was really upfront in some of this review literature that we went over, that heaping praise, and where it's needed, of course, or where it's deserved,
honest,
but to
honest
praise. And listening, there was the listening capacity, and you know, holding public court, listening to the masses or the people. It's like that I care, and yes, you did something good. That is, because then it's empowering for the people, and a real king, a real leader should make strong subjects or whoever you're ruling over. They should be strong, not just keep them weak so you can be strong. That's the boy in the throne.
Yeah, exactly.
The man and the mature man in the throne will make sure that everyone else is strong, lift them up, give them the means and the tools, and give them the appreciation and praise. Yeah. So, wow.
All right.
Praise another for what they do. Guys, just do it. I mean, it's maybe it doesn't come naturally, but and they're not throwaway things. You would be surprised at how a little bit of encouragement, or a little bit of, hey, thanks for doing that. I really appreciate you not parking me in the driveway like you usually do. Or something. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's a great point. You're absolutely right.
You don't have to have that snippy thing on the end, but you know what I mean? It's you'd be surprised how effective.
That's a fantastic endpoint. Thank you for sharing that. Thanks for listening today. We appreciate you listening each week. Do check out the book, King, Warrior, Magician, Lover, Robert Moore and Douglas Gillette, if you want to go deeper into the idea of the King archetype, but also the other three archetypes that we didn't get into, the Warrior, Magician, and Lover, which are these foundational sort of archetypes that really can help a man orient himself towards life in a constructive and positive way. Like we said, the positive side of this masculine energy instead of this negative and destructive sort of boyhood, you know, refusal to grow up kind of energy that seems to be so prevalent and that people are justifiably attacking. So anyway, we are here each week. We have a new episode on Monday, as I said, every week, and we're thankful for our supporters and listeners. Check us out on cosmiceye.org or at chrissheridan.com. Chris is the author of The Spirit in the Sky. I am the author of If You Can Worry, You Can Meditate. So please check our books out if you get a chance. Thanks again for listening. And we will be here again next week. Have a great week and God bless.